science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Good evening, everyone. Yes, indeed. Let's get started here. Tonight, I have an accomplished individual on the show. Yes, indeed. Who is this person? Sam Baltrusis. One of the things that I keep forgetting to mention during each of my introductions on the show, especially on the podcast portion, is that I am also seen, along with my guests, on Paraflix under the category talk shows. And my talk show is called Disembodied Voices. So in addition to hearing me on the podcast or on Para X, you can also see me and these guests on my talk show. And so if you look in the show notes below, you will see how to go about getting there and, of course, take advantage of the 3-day free trial. All right, everybody, we need to get started. So now sit back and enjoy as we hear a little bit more about Sam Baltrusis.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Well, hello, Sam, and thank you so very much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my goodness. What a television celebrity. I'm loving it. Okay. So, Sam, I have to get started really quick with you here today because we have a lot to discuss. And so I usually have a drill that I go through with many of my experiencers or individuals of authors such as yourself. And so I want you to go back as far as you can. And I want you to think about where this all happened or evolved, started to evolve for you, because everybody has a place, Mark, and I'm sure you have one. And so what would you say was your one of your most significant starts as you now have evolved to this point in your life?
So to give you some backstory with me, I grew up in Florida. I had a grandfather who passed when I was really young, and I started to communicate with my grandfather at a really young age, to the point where I felt like I got like a download of some sorts. So like information kind of downloading to me when I was a child, and it was terrifying for me. So I had regular visitations from the spirit realm, and then I put on what I call paranormal blinders. So the experiences were just so profound and so overwhelming that I couldn't do it anymore. So I went most of my young adult life having experiences, but kind of trying to find something to explain it, that you know, this is not paranormal. This is just a disembodied, you know, thing grabbing my leg. And that, I always tried to find an explanation as to why this was happening. I moved back to Boston in 2007, and then I started writing books on the paranormal. And what led me to that is I was a journalist for 20 years before that, and I would have experiences along the way, but I tried to find explanations as to, you know, what was going on, and I didn't want to believe that it was paranormal related. So I moved back in 2007. I wrote an article for a local magazine that turned into my first book called Ghosts of Boston, and it was wonderful because I was able to write history books with ghost stories. So my objective was not to write paranormal books per se, but to write history books with ghost stories. And then it just exploded from there. So I wrote my first book on Ghost of Boston, and then it turned into me going into the locations, having very profound experiences, and opening up my third eye and my working that muscle as an empath, as a clairvoyant, to the point where now I identify as a clairvoyant. And as we've seen on several TV shows, I'm actually brought into locations to psychically read the location.
Wow. That is going to be one heck of a discussion we're going to have today. Okay, I'm going to break this down. I need to break it down a little bit because you've given us a lot, but I'm thinking, holy cow, right? I want you to go back again. We're going to go back, all right, to that little tyke hood. Did you say, if I heard you correctly, that you had some type of an interaction with, did you say your grandfather? Did I hear you correctly on that?
Yeah, so my grandfather, who passed when I was really young, I met him once or twice when I was a child, but my dad was in the Navy, and I lived in Chicago until I was 7 years old. My parents divorced, but my grandfather had already passed. So when I moved back to Florida, we actually stayed in my grandfather's house, and I slept in the room that he slept in without knowing that was granddaddy's room. That's where I would have very prophetic dreams and have spirit communication with my grandfather without really having known him when he was alive, but having spirit communication, like communicating, talking to him.
Wow.
Yeah, my grandfather, I consider him to be my spirit guide now. He was with me the whole time, and I feel like he was a guiding force in my life, whether, you know, through the good times and the bad times, to the point where I'm at currently.
Interesting. So you're having, so as a tyke, you're in his room. Did he show himself to you in a glowing type of form, or did you just telekinetically start hearing a voice in your head that was, and you're just kind of took note of that going, what is that? And then all of a sudden you were starting to make a connection. What was that initial connection like for you?
Well, it initially started out with having dreams, and I would sleep, and I would wake up, and I would see my grandfather in my dreams. He was usually sitting in a chair or a couch in the home that he lived in, and we were there at the time. So I feel like maybe I either was left my body while I was dreaming, or somehow we were communicating when I was in a dream state. Then he started to appear to me sitting on the corner of the bed, and we would just have conversations. And so his appearance to me was actually not like a human form. It was kind of like a white glowing figure, but it didn't seem odd to me at all, because I was a young child, so I didn't really think it was strange in any way. It was just granddaddy paying a visit to me.
Wow. And that, you know, how old would you say you were? About 8, 9 years old, 7?
Well, it was like, so we moved back when I was 6, and then so it was around between 6 and 8 that these experiences had happened regularly.
Yeah, you know, when I was 4 years old, I tell this story all the time. I had dreams, but what I was dreaming about were tragic situations, civil unrest, airplane crashes, you know, you name it, I dreamt about it. And then I would see it on TV the next day. And I mean, I'm a little tyke. I'm 4 or 5 years old dreaming about this stuff. And then it came a point where I thought, for myself anyway, that I was causing this stuff. It was just getting to be too coincidental for me. So I can relate to the dream aspect, and then having that wide open antenna out there that really... Now, I'm going to ask you this question, though, because most people want to know, or at least they're curious. Do you recall ever having a discussion with anyone in your family, or knowing that anyone in your family line was also a sensitive?
So, yes. So my mother, in a very similar fashion, my grandfather reached out to her as well. And my mother, who has experiences and had experiences, will firmly say that she's not a psychic medium, or that she's not an empath. Yeah. But she had multiple experiences throughout my life. And I strongly believe that my grandfather was as well. So I feel like it passed from my grandfather to my mother, to myself.
Right.
And my sister, who also is like me, and my nieces as well. So it does pass through the family line.
Yep, and I just had a conversation with another guest about that very same thing. Although for the longest time, I just wrote an article that's going to be in a magazine coming up in November about am I a neurodivergent beacon, which in my terminology is like a lighthouse, because I don't know what it is, and maybe you can explain it, or maybe you've come to terms with it a little bit. But honest to God, I get asked this question all the time. I don't know where this comes from. And it's just like, well, I don't know where it comes from either, but I keep thinking it's the pineal gland, or, you know, something about us is, or in my case, I had a lot of traumatic experiences when I was growing up. So I'm going to ask you, and I'm going to put this on your shoulders since you're really, really into this. Where do you think this stuff comes from? Trauma? Do you think it comes from some kind of something else down the line, and it just follows a line, and it, you know, like your sister had it, but that, which is interesting because usually more than one might have it. What do you think, Sam?
Well, I mean, my latest take on everything in my life, I wrote a book called Related to Evil, and I appeared on a show called Curse of Lizzie Borden. I strongly feel that it's the family curse. So it's passed down from generation to generation. I found out the past few years that I'm related not only to Lizzie Borden, but I'm also related to the Putnam family, who were the major accusers during the Salem witch trials. If you look at the lineage, in addition to a lot of trauma in my DNA, like it's our family line is stained with blood. I think that there was also clairvoyance within our family lineage going back to innocent Cornell Borden and to Lizzie Borden. So I think that it's something that our family, it just passed down from generation to generation. And in some ways, some people would view it as a curse, and I'm trying to view it as a blessing.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is we're just now learning a little bit more, and that's why I wrote the article. I wanted to extend the conversation about where exactly did this start, and from what the research that I had, just from some of the stuff that I've done, said it can go back as far as 6 to 7 to maybe even 8 generations back, and it depends on what happened back then, and then it started, obviously it gets into the genetic line somehow, and it starts working its way up the line. Now, I know from a large family that I'm from, I know that there's a few more in my family that are sensitive. But the thing is they're in complete denial about it. It's just like, no, this doesn't exist. You know, have you had naysayers along the way, and even within your own family, about the types of gifts that you have?
Yes, but I mean, for many years, I was terrified of it, so I wasn't really public with my gifts.
Yeah.
I was as a child, and I remember thinking, because I grew up in Pensacola, Florida, which is the Bible Belt, and I remember going to church and talking to my Sunday school teacher about what was happening, because I thought it was visitations from God. I really thought it was a spiritual gift at the time. I wasn't sure what was going on. And the Sunday school teacher gave me the Bible and was like, pray the ghost away. That's the devil trying to reach out to you. So I really did think at the time it was evil when I was a child. I was trying to pray the clairvoyancy away. As I got older, I continued to have experiences, like when I worked in New York City, I had something grab my leg right outside of Washington Square Park multiple times, and I thought it was a person trying to get my attention, and I looked down, there was nobody there, and it turned out it was a mass grave for a tuberculosis patient.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh God. Once you start researching the land like that, you'd be surprised some of the things that do come up, which was a question that I have that I wanted to ask about, even living in, did you say when you're at your grandfather's house, did you ever research the land there to see if there was anything that might have, I don't know, lifted up this energy to another level? Have you ever looked into things like that? Anything else that might have happened there?
Well, so I grew up in Pensacola, Florida. So for people that don't know the whole history, you think of Florida, you automatically think of Miami. Pensacola is right at the very tip of Florida, right next to Alabama. And beautiful, beautiful land. It's also very ancient as well. It dates back hundreds of years that, you know, it was actually a precursor to what happened for to Plymouth in 1620. So there's a history there. There was a colony that tried to set up a Spanish colony in the 1500s in Pensacola. And because of a hurricane, the hurricane decimated the colony, and they moved to St. Augustine. So Pensacola is actually older than St. Augustine, Florida, which is has the claim to fame as the oldest colony in America. So there's a lot of history in Pensacola that a lot of people don't know about, and a lot of hidden history to Pensacola. So a lot of Native American history. There's also, I've had experiences as a child with Confederate soldiers and Union soldiers. And why would I have a full-bodied apparition of a Union soldier? Well, the Union soldier actually had, there was a fort that was right in downtown Pensacola that was a Union-held fort during the Civil War. So I have looked into the history of my town, but I moved here in the 90s, so I've really focused my energies on Boston and New England for most of my adult life.
Yeah, and of course, you know as well as I do that you're probably in just as haunted area there as you were down in Florida, or at least the way I term it with people. It seems like no matter where I go, there they are. So people are always asking me, well, when do you have your most paranormal experiences? And I just sit and I look at them and go, anytime. I said, it doesn't matter where you are. I said, depending on what is there or the type of energy that's there, if it wants to come and talk to me, it will make itself known. I had something in my car yesterday that I wasn't aware of that. Now, maybe it's we're getting out of retrograde or something, but I'm telling you, I just got back from Utah, and most of my listeners and viewers are fully aware. I was an interviewer of the Skinwalker Ranch guys down in that, you know, that area. And that whole basin was just nuts when I was there. I had an experience every day. People are like, I don't know what you're talking about. And it's like, well, so my question to you now, Sam, is do you have experiences every day? I mean, you're very much into this.
Well, when you say into this, I would say that, like, I don't hunt ghosts. Ghosts hunt me. So it's, a lot of it is when I say I like having setting boundaries with the spirit realm. I don't like necessarily having experiences every day. And I've learned to control it more. So you turn it on, you turn it off when you go into a location. Yes, do I have experiences very often? I do. But I also, I've learned to kind of control it more than I was able to control it for many years. It was something that, you know, if you look at my backstory, I had, I was doing an event in Salem, Massachusetts. It actually was in Topsfield, right outside of Salem, but considered Salem in 1692, where I channeled an entity that basically took me over, and I had an attachment for 8 days, and the attachment nearly killed me. So I have to be really, really careful with my communication and how I communicate with the spirit realm, because sometimes they have a tendency of actually taking me over and hijacking my body, basically.
Well, you bring up a good story for me. Everybody has heard this story. I've beat it to death a million times. So I was in Zach Bagan's Haunted Museum, and I had my cross on, and I thought to myself, nothing's going to hurt me because I have my cross on, and I have made a boundary saying, don't touch me, okay? Well, from the moment that I walked in, it was almost like hunting season, and I would say I got about halfway through the museum, and then all of a sudden, it all started to happen. And one by one, everything from the clown in the, or not the clown, it was a puppet in the puppet room, that nothing was moving in there, but this one was turning and looking right at me. And I knew right then and there, something had its eye on me, followed me to the coffin room where I sat. My sister sat on the chair, but I pointed to the chair where the shadow person came out of it. And I was just like, and then all of a sudden, and maybe you can explain this to me. We were walking up the stairs to go upstairs into a clown area, clown room. We're going towards the Dybbuk box area. and it got me, whatever it was, it took me over on the steps going up, and I nearly lost consciousness. I was practically crawling. I had no energy. I was crawling up the stairs practically, got up there, laid against the wall, and I absolutely went into a trance. And all I could see through my eyes were like three or four shadows. It was the people that had worked there. Literally, production stopped. My sister was screaming. I could hear her from a distance, and I could see these shadows, but I couldn't do much of anything. I just stood there for about five. It felt like forever, but probably 5 to 8 minutes before they could finally kind of get me to come back to whatever. But when you talk about that, that is very real. And what do you suppose happened there? Because I don't know if I challenged it or if I was rubbing the cross too much outwardly and it just thought, I'll take you on. What do you think, Sam? I just never know how I managed to get attacked on those stairs. What do you think?
Well, so I'm also, so when I walk into a room, I'm like a beacon of light to the spirit realm. So that they want that energy. They want a piece of us, you know, so the darker entities are going to go after people like us because we just emanate the energy that they want. Yeah. So what I'm getting from that is it wasn't that you were mocking them per se, but if it's a dark entity, it's probably going to say, I'm going to get her because, you know, she's wearing her cross and she has your shield on. I'm like, I'm going to show her. And that's kind of what I got, what I'm getting from this situation, that it was just trying to basically, just unfortunately, like mess with you and kind of scare you. And the fear feeds them, and they feed off fear. And if I know that when I am terrified, I do give off a intense fear, and it's almost like it gets stronger when you, the more afraid you are, the stronger it gets. So, I mean, I suspect, and this happened to me as well, there's something about your energy and your light that attracts the darker entities.
Yeah, and when it happened, when it attached or it tried to take you over, or it did, what did you experience? Because I know mine lasted, I think I felt it finally getting off of me or something getting out of me. The woman kept saying, the assistant there who was part of the tour thing, she kept saying, are you sure you can go on? Because I was just standing there like this. And I said, yes, I think so. And I could barely get it out. But then as I started to walk, and then I went into the Dybbuk box room area, I never went towards that thing. I just stood in the background. Then all of a sudden, I felt whatever it was release. And then by the time we got to Peggy's room, it was gone. But then she goes and she shuts the door into Peggy's room. And here I am face to face with, others looking at this Peggy the doll. And I'm thinking, oh my God, get me out of here. But I managed to make it through, but I did literally feel it get off of me. So did you feel whatever was on you or taking you over, get off of you? What happened?
So basically, I was doing an event in Salem. It was the night before Halloween, and I was telling the story of Richard Crowninshield, who murdered Captain Joseph White in 1830. He took a club, hit Captain Joseph White over the head once, and then he took a dirk and stabbed him around the heart 13 times. Oh. While I was telling the story, this is a really, really bad idea, so I don't even want to kind of say what happened, but I did kind of like a mock seance. Yeah. Where I was communicating with Richard Crowninshield, and this is before I accepted my abilities as a clairvoyant. So almost like calling Richard Crowninshield to join us in the room to tell his side of the story. It worked. Even though it was a Halloween experience and I was trying to, kind of play a role, the entity was walking behind me, kind of pacing behind me, jumps into me, and I look in the mirror, and I'm with my good friend Mike, who was like the sound guy during this event, and I can see my face in the mirror, and it was contorted, my teeth were jagged, my face was kind of like monstrous. Yeah. And I'm like, Mike, I don't feel very well, something's going on. And I remember feeling agitated and also getting a lot of information from Richard Crowninshield, like, you know, he didn't act alone, and maybe he was framed, his brother did it, things like that. And the part that I remember the most on the I was giving this amazing performance because I was channeling Richard Crowninshield, but I didn't feel that on the inside. So I felt like I was just either exhausted or something was off, and I didn't really think it was an attachment at the time. And people reported seeing the shadow walk behind me and not necessarily jumping inside me, but just they can see the shadow kind of like pacing behind me while I was talking. So. And multiple people came to me in the room and they're like, there was something behind you when you were talking. And I was like, yeah, okay. I didn't really view it as a potential attachment that was going to, you know, stay with me and take over my life for 8 days. So as it progressed, this is in the episode of A Haunting. I was in the 100th episode of A Haunting called Provoking Evil. And I wouldn't call what I did provoking evil. I would call it accidentally provoking evil because I didn't mean to do anything close to what happened. It was supposed to be more of a telling a story about Richard Crowninshield and what happened to Captain Joseph White. The mansion that I was in was called Pierce Farm at Witch Hill. And there was and that land was stained with blood. That's where Mary Eastie, one of the victims of the Salem witch trials, that's where she hid before she was carted off and executed in 1692 in the lower basement area. And the house, of course, was built in the 1800s. And then the Crowninshield family owned that property, so that's why I talked about Richard Crowninshield. So it was an 8-day ordeal that I was going in and out of consciousness for 8 days. I would wake up, I would look out, I would be standing at my balcony, looking out the window, like I was about to...
Now, I need to ask you a quick question because we went out there, and again, to our viewers and listeners, we're doing the best we can on our streaming site today. Did you say when you went to the balcony, that of course you left everybody in suspense, what happened? When you're going to the balcony, what happened? Did you feel like you're going to jump off, or what happened at that point?
Well, if you watch the episode of A Haunting called Provoking Evil, the entity kept saying, do it, do it, do it. And as I say in the show, do it. He wanted me to jump off. And I was trying my best to fight it. And at this point, I had some experience with the paranormal field. As an author, I've written 15 books now, but my books initially were history books. They were not paranormal books. They were just telling ghost stories at historic locations. So it wasn't, I didn't identify as a clairvoyant then. It wanted me to jump off the balcony, wanted me to drink alcohol. I've been sober for 13 years. And the idea of drinking alcohol to me is worse than, you know, I can't do it. So it was a, if you know the backstory of Richard Crowninshield, he was a bad seed. He was in his 20s, he was a drinker, a gambler. He was a murderer for hire. So the reason why he killed Captain Joseph White was because he was paid money to kill him.
You know what's interesting? You just brought up something that just happened to me on my way back from Vernal, and I'm going to share just the tidbit here with you because you just brought something up really interesting. So my husband and I, we stopped in Wyoming. We went up to Wyoming and then on our way back to Salt Lake City, and we stopped at a place that was, it was called Fort Bridger. I don't know if it was a state park or it was some kind of a tourist trap, something military associated back in the day. Well, I discovered on our way walking out, and we're by ourselves on this little property in the afternoon, and there was a cell, a jail. And I said, I just had this on one of my shows, and I said, I think I'm just going to kind of meander into this jail here. And sure enough, they had the bars and it was really dark in the jail and everything. And I thought, you know, I'm going to take a chance here, but I'm going to open up my phone and I'm going to take some snaps and see if I can get any information. Well, sure enough, there was one or two in there because I managed to capture that on my camera. But more importantly, when my husband and I left and we went back to our cabin, I said, I'll be with you in just a second. I've got to make a phone call to the front desk. And you have to know me. I called the front desk and I said, yeah, can you tell me where the nearest bar is around here? I said, I really need a drink. And I don't drink, Sam. I drink maybe one glass of wine every 3 or 6 months. I do not drink. And it's just like, yeah, where's the place that gives the hardest alcohol? And my husband, I got off the phone, he goes, what's wrong with you? What happened to you? I said, I don't know. I just felt like I needed to ask where the nearest bar was. Now, I did feel a tingle when I was at that jail, and I said, uh-oh, and I said, no, do not attach to me, you can't come back with me, you can go anywhere else here, but do not come back with me. But that was, I didn't really feel, what's the word, just like what you mentioned before, you know, you can kind of feel a little lethargic, a little kind of out of it, a little bit weird and off, and I did not feel that way. But when I was just saying these words, I was very serious about it. I don't know. Have you ever had any experience that, and now in this case, you didn't intentionally provoke this experience, but I'm just thinking of, I've had many, many, and some more traumatic. Have you ever had a situation, I call it like the divining light moment. I had my divining light moment in Europe a few years ago when I was in a very haunted room with a cycling mirror. And I will tell you to this, I swore off ghosts for 3 years after that. Have you ever had a moment where you said, I'm good, I've had enough, I've been down this road too much, you know, stick a fork in me. Have you ever had a defining light moment yet?
Absolutely. I mean, that what I just described, getting an attachment that nearly killed me, was a defining light moment. it was to the point where I'm like, you know what, I have a gift and I have to learn how to use it.
Yeah.
It was my defining light was, you know, stop fighting it, Sam. You have this, you got to work with it. You've had it since you were a child. When Michael Robichaud did a removal on me, he's a shaman. When he did the removal, I could physically see the entity leave my body. And I saw spirit guides, his spirit guides and my grandfather, in that room where they were fighting off this entity, which is not normal. Normally you don't see entities leave or attachments leave your body. Because I'm clairvoyant, something opened up even more so by having that attachment. So that was a huge moment in my development as a psychic medium, to the point where it opened up the floodgates to my clairvoyancy.
Are you telekinetic?
So telekinetic is something I study. I'm a psychometrist. So psychometrist is where you touch an object and you get mind pictures off of that object. Telekinetic, this psychokinesis is where you things can be created or to be moved. When you say telekinetic, what's your definition of telekinesis?
Well, I don't know, but I'm either psychokinetic or kinetic or telekinetic. I'll give you some examples and maybe you can help me define myself.
Okay.
So, and I'll give you simple examples. So I could go on for hours with this. So I'll give you some past and some current. Okay. So past, I used to think it was a coincidence that these elevator doors would open up for me. And I thought, wow, what service around here. I don't even have to touch a button. The thing just goes flying open. But it was like a lot of times, okay? And then after a while, I thought to myself, well, maybe I'm doing something like that again, or there's something in me that's provoking something to do that. Now, move that to I've haunted 3 homes. And basically, in one situation, the key in the front door, which was like this, you know, straight up and down, as usual. One day, all I did is I just glanced at the key in the door the night before. And then the next day, there's nobody else that lives in the house except my husband and I, and we never go out that door. It was turned that way. Let's talk about clock dials. Let's talk about 6 hours ahead, almost to the minute for some reason. I don't know. I seem to have an effect or something around me knows that I'm looking at something. And even from a distance, I was flying home once and I thought about my clock near my bed. And sure enough, I get home and the clock dials are 6 hours in advance ahead again. But the most recent one, and I've had all kinds of these things happen. The most recent one that happened was when I was in Utah. And my husband and I were in our hotel room. And he was in his bed, I was in mine. And all of a sudden I hear, padonk. And I'm like, what was that? And we both kind of looked down the center of the, you know, the beds and stuff like that. And when I put my backpack up on this ledge, which was still had a lip to it, so it wasn't hanging over it at all, I made sure that that backpack was not going to fall over because there was no way. It catapulted, jumped off and onto the floor, but instead of the opening being toward me, the opening of it was like a somersault toward the back of the bench or the ledge or whatever you want to call it, the long bench. And I looked at my husband and I said, what the? I said, did I do that? Or is there something attached to me in here that did that? So I have lots of different movements. Oh, here's one. Here's a good one for you. We had this wardrobe from my great-grandfather back in the 1800s, and of course, you know, estate pickings. So I picked this wardrobe and we were going to clean it up and repaint it and everything, stain it so it looked nice. So we kept it out in my garage here for a good 8 months. And you couldn't get into it because it was sealed shut because it was, you know, when you get humidity, everything expands and you have to kind of struggle to open it up. Well, it was really, really shut and you have to get something in there and pull it back. Well, one day I called it poltergeist week or two in our house. All kinds of things were happening, flying around the house. We walk out of the garage. We get into the car. We're going to go out and eat dinner. And as soon as I sat down in my car, I looked over to my right and I went or left and I went, oh my God, the door of the wardrobe had flown. I kid you not. That was sealed shut, flew open, and it was all the way to the back near the wall. And I said to my husband, is it the poltergeist? Is it me doing this? What on earth is happening here? Well, it took about 2 weeks. By the way, it tripped me going down the stairs twice, almost broke my back. But long story short, and it also, by the way, locked the front door on me when I was out talking to my painter and I needed my husband to come home with a client in his car to let me back into the house. But anyway, all these things are happening. So now that I give these illustrations to you, am I talking poltergeist? Am I talking some type of psychokinetic ability here? What do you think, Sam? I'm curious.
All right, so there's a theory called PK theory or psychokinesis. And to me, psychokinesis is paranormal activity that is actually caused by the energy attached to a person, associated with a person. So psychokinesis can actually create ghosts. It's almost like a thought form. They have that ability to kind of create things outside of their body. It's the energy that they have. So I'm getting classic psychokinesis. And it's very similar to telekinesis, like you said, but in the sense that it mimics paranormal activity. And so I strongly, based on what you just told me, sounds like it's definitely psychokinesis based on what you just told me.
Yeah, things jumping off ledges, wardrobe doors flying open. I mean, things shooting against the wall, things, you know, coming off here and there. It's very interesting. Although I have to add one more factor in here, and maybe it isn't a factor at all. I was told by a neighbor that it is possible that the two kids that lived in this house before we bought it were playing with the Ouija board. And I don't know if they conjured anything up or whatnot, but I'll tell you, from the moment we came in to this house and from the moment I started making changes to it, it was like I was under attack. I don't know that makes any sense to you at all.
It does. And I think a lot of times people, they have a tendency of taking PK or even poltergeist activity and kind of like wanting to see that it's the D word. And I strongly don't feel like it's the D word. I actually think it's not human in a sense that it's energy that is connected to you. Now, did you bring that energy from another location? It's very possible. So in other words, it's something maybe that has attached itself to you, but it's a non-human entity, so it's not, but it's not the D word, it's not demonic.
So I'm
in a school that you have a gift, something kind of triggered that gift, like it's something opened it up, and then to the point where it's going to happen until you understand what's going on and learn how to control it. You know, and maybe you don't want to control it. Maybe as long as you view what's happening around you, like doors opening and closing and lights turning on and off, as not paranormal activity and as something that's attached to you.
Here's something that also had happened. Now, you talk about attachments, right? Well, let me tell you what happened when my attachments got removed. So I've been doing shows now for a long time and podcasting for a while, and someone had brought up this couple down in San Diego who were supposedly attachment experts and all that. So I said, what the heck? I said, I don't know what's going on in my life. Maybe I've got attachments. So anyway, from afar, she managed to, I don't know if she remote viewed me or what, but she scanned me. She said, you've got 16 attachments on you and I'm going to take them off of you. And I said, well, how are you going to do that? We're not even next to each other. I don't know how you can do that. She says, you will know the moment I take them off, you will know. And I said, well, can you give me, and she said, I'm not telling you when it's going to happen. So I was sleeping in bed, sound asleep. It was the night before I was to interview her brother, actually, on my show. And all of a sudden, I kid you not, unconscious, half conscious. I can't even do a sit-up, Sam, for God's sakes. I just kind of sat up like this in bed, my mouth opened wide open, and I started, it was like vomiting air, vomit, 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 and I've never ever done it before, and I've never done it since, vomit, 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 and then as soon as it was done, I just collapsed back in bed, my head hit the pillow, and I thought, what the heck was that? So the next day, of course, I brought it up on the show, and I said, by chance, did you have a visit with me last night at whatever in the morning? Because I said, whatever happened to me was the weirdest thing I ever happened in my life. Now, the one thing that I had also brought up to them, too, was I was winning jackpots in casinos. Now, I'm not a heavy gambler. I like to gamble. I can admit to that. But I had won 18 jackpots in 22 visits over like the past 4 years. And any machine that I would go to, I would just hear a voice in my head, sit down, now play it. You know, now I haven't been hearing the voice lately. But I'm telling you, I had won lots. I said, can you leave that attachment on me? Because obviously that one's working for me. But
yeah.
What are your thoughts about that? Or is just a really weird coincidences? I don't know how me people might ask this, Sam. How do you know, because you can't ever tell, if you might have an attachment on you? Let me open that question up there.
Well, let me, your other question was, you know, what is my take on what happened to you? It's very similar to what happened to me, actually. So when I had my attachment, Michael Robichaud did a removal, I saw the spirit guides kind of scan the room. And then I fell back and I passed out. And I kind of like when you were saying the vomit air, yeah. It was very, really similar to that. It was jumping out of me, but I saw it physically jump out of me. So the difference between you and me is I'm clairvoyant, mm-hmm. So I was able to see the entity jump out, and it was a shape of a monster or of a human. So I could see it, but it sounded really, really similar, and I was so kind of heaving, like I was getting, like it was coming out of my, you know, out of my system, you know. So it was
right.
Really similar. What is an attachment? I don't know. I mean, I've had one. I know what the signs are when you have an attachment. And I also know how to protect myself against attachments now. But for me, it's a different feeling. You have sort of like you can actually feel like I go in and out of consciousness when I have that attachment. But I'll tell you, I haven't had anything compared to what that first one was that nearly killed me. Since then, I've had things try to attach itself to me, but quickly removed. after that, because Michael Robichaud actually does continue to kind of like look out for me as someone that he did a major removal on. It's something, and also it activated my spirit guides too. So my spirit guides, if I'm in trouble, I will get, they will let me know. They'll let me know if I'm in trouble.
You know, the thing is I wish I had more of that. But on the other hand, my intuition seems to be pretty sharp or aware or observant about certain situations. And if I feel like I'm in trouble or in a situation that I should just get out of, my gut says, and I say this to my husband all the time, I said, I don't like it here, and I'm leaving right now, or I will turn and I will walk away. When we were in, I don't know if it was South or North Carolina, we were on a plantation, and this was when I first started getting really interested in ghostly activity, and I wanted to always stay in a haunted place. Well, that became obsessive, and then all of a sudden now look where I am, 10 times further than I was. But my husband said, when we walked into our room, he said, I don't believe in this stuff. He said, bring it on, ghosts. And I thought, oh my God. And that whole night was nothing but one thing after the other. Sparks flying out of our TV, things happening in the bathroom, noises. Our door didn't even have a lock on, and he couldn't get into the room, and I couldn't get it open. And there was all kinds of things that was kind of proving him wrong. And so, you know, the thing is I know people are always excited and they want to have a ghostly experience and stuff. And the title of, or the theme of my show is Be Careful What You Wish For, because that really goes back and extends to me a long way back, even when I was a little tyke about wanting to see a ghost. And then years later, I photographed two in a screen window on my grandparents' property. Very clear, by the way. But then I also learned about Trickster. I want to ask you about tricksters, because years later, I was on my grandparents' property, and it's in my book, and it's very clear, and people are just always like, oh my God, you know, they can see it. And of course, there's face matrixing too. And I know you understand all about that. But the thing is, it's that they telepathically said something to me of check the genealogy. And I thought, well, how weird. And I did. And of course, I had the little girl's name wrong. So that stands to be corrected. But that also brought up a good question about trickster activity and wondering when you can maybe even tell if you've got that near, you know, you've investigated and been in it part of many haunted situations. So how can you tell when it's a legitimate little girl situation versus a trickster situation?
Yeah, so I've been fooled over and over again by the tricksters. And I had a situation where I had a woman who, and I'm a softie when it comes to the spirit realm. So I want to help women and children and people that have been marginalized by society. So whether they're a victim of the Salem witch trials or someone who may have been marginalized by history. So they always get me. So the tricksters, there's been one situation where I got another attachment. This is soon after getting that first attachment of what appeared to be like a trickster, but she was a crone. When I say crone, she was kind of like a witch spirit that kind of wanted to be my spirit guide. And so she took the shape of a woman that was a nurse, and she was So the woman was basically like the entity attached itself to me, and it took different shapes. So whether it took a shape of a woman, she came in the shape of a child. So yeah, it's really hard to tell whether or not I'm talking to or communicating with an actual child or a woman or an entity or non-human entity that takes the shape of a woman and a child.
Yeah. Yeah. Continue. I was going to say that's a little scary because you really don't know what their motive is.
Having communicated with non-human entities in the past, whether I liked it or not, the one thing that these things like from me specifically, it's like, what do you want from Sam? And this is what the investigator, my fellow clairvoyant, she's actually a witch, we're doing, and it said energy. It wants my energy, it wants your energy. And it's not going to hurt me, but it's going to hurt the people around me. Because the people around me are keeping this entity away from me.
Interesting. That's interesting, because I often wonder myself. Of course, I can usually tell if I'm really drained, or I feel drained or really tired or something. There are days when I do question if something is hanging about, chewing on my energy or something like that, because sometimes I can't tell, or maybe it's just low blood sugar, but you know, one or the other on that. I was going to bring this into extraterrestrial. Have you ever had a situation where you have had, because this evolved for me, I think, and I will bring up a situation in a second here. Has this evolved for you to anything extraterrestrial?
I'm terrified of aliens. Yes, it has, but I'm kind of to the point where I'm not ready to go there. Yeah. With the ET stuff, but I will say I had an experience. I did a show or documentary called The House in Between Two. And this property was in Mississippi. The crew, including Steve from Ghost Hunters, flew me down with the idea of not knowing what the property was. And I ended up reading the property for Alice Jackson, who owns the house in between. It's this really odd shaped, kind of like a house that has lots of paranormal activity, but there's also extraterrestrial activity as well. And I clearly saw what looked like a spacecraft right above us. while we were filming, and I remember seeing it and having an experience out in the backyard that didn't make the documentary, but it was terrifying, where I got confirmation that there is ET stuff happening. And I think I have an ongoing stalker that wears a hat, a shadow figure that wears a hat with red glowing eyes. I feel like somehow that this entity is some maybe extraterrestrial.
Interesting. Well, it doesn't surprise me. I was curious, and people would ask, well, did anyone else see the craft that you saw, or were you isolated at a point where no one else is really around to see that? Did anyone else see that?
Yeah, so we were out in the field, and it was right above us, and the cameraman was with me, and they chose not to. So basically, other people did see the craft while we were filming The House in Between Two, but I was outside with a camera crew. So it was a team of two people that saw the UFO or UFI, whatever they're called, hovering above us. So other people did see it as well.
Yeah, the reason why I asked you that is it just seems like as time has gone on for me, it seems like things are either evolving or they're taking a different shape, or they're trying to show me that what I have. Okay, so here's an example. So when I was younger, and I don't know about you, but I was raised fairly religious, okay? And everything was spiritual back then, you know, and I agree with you regarding people thinking, oh, it's the devil's work or whatever. And, you know, my family kind of lives by that. But anyway, I never really did, but I did in the beginning. Okay, then all of a sudden, things kind of changed a little bit. And then they kind of felt more paranormal to me. And I thought, nah, it's not spiritual. It's paranormal. Yeah, it's got to be paranormal. Yeah, that's what it is. And then just recently in the last, oh, I'd say 4 or 5 years, unless it's been going on longer, I woke up one morning and I had a handprint, blood, dark purple, red on my chest right here. But it was upside down. Elongated fingers. One of the fingers was crooked. I do recall the night before smelling really horrendous rose water type smell. I thought it was my husband's shampoo. I was going to chew him out the next day for you know, using such cheap shampoo and all that. But it stayed on my body for 3 hours. It was very prominent. It didn't hurt. And it certainly wasn't like a major bruise or anything. But it did disappear very slowly, and then it was gone. And I had been asking people for a long time, what the heck was that? Is that extraterrestrial? Is that paranormal or whatever? And I've gotten like 4 different theories, Sam. So it's like I've kind of given up. But I do know one thing. It wasn't my own hand. That's the only thing I can declare out of all of that. So now I have turned to thinking a lot of these things that I might have been experiencing, maybe they're a little bit more extraterrestrial rather than paranormal. I don't know. What are your thoughts about all this evolvement stuff or whatever? What are your thoughts?
So I feel like that, getting back to what you were saying earlier about PK, psychokinesis, I feel like a lot of what you're describing is psychokinesis. Okay. And so you're able, as you evolve, as your abilities evolve, you're able to create, to manifest things that were not, you can create monsters with mm-hmm. psychokinesis. So something like a hand on your, like a purplish hand, it like can be manifested with your thoughts. So I strongly feel, by understanding your abilities with psychokinesis, you have to learn how to harness those abilities, because you can do some great things with it, like winning the lottery.
You mean like winning 18 jackpots out of 22 two visits? Oh my God, I paid off with one of the jackpots, I paid off my brand new car. I mean, it was like, oh my God, you know, I don't have this kind of luck. What's happened to me? It was really, really, this stuff is kind of very coincidentally odd when it does happen, you know. So, well, now that you've been through kind of your own lifetime of interesting, like a rocky road of experiences of which you've been writing, and Sam has a number of books on Amazon, tell us a little bit about some of your most favorite books that you've written, and kind of where you're at in your authorship of things.
So I've written 15 books altogether. My most recent book is called Related to Evil, and I have to say it's definitely what top on my list of favorite books. It's a labor of love going through my family lineage that I found out later in life that I'm related to the Putnam family, who were the major accusers during the Salem witch trials, and then also turns out that I'm related to Lizzie Borden. So instead of history books with ghost stories, this is me telling my story. It's almost like a travel guide going through the steps of finding out that I'm related to these people, and also trying to give them post-mortem peace. So once I realized, hey, I'm related to the Borden family, hey, I'm related to the Putnams, my goal is to focus on their story and to tell their story correctly, but also to possibly, you know, reach out to them and undo the wrongs from their past.
So would you say that's your favorite book to this point, or do you have a favorite book?
I mean, so my claim to fame is Ghost of Salem, and Ghost of Salem is always going to be near and dear to my heart. It's my bestseller, and having 15 and choosing my favorite one out of my 15 is like choosing my favorite kid. Like they're all my little monster babies. Right. But Ghost of Salem is the one I'm known for the most, and it was the most life-changing book for me. Like once I wrote that book, became accepted, embraced by the paranormal community, because it's still a top seller for me, and it's almost 10 years later. So Ghost of Salem was my first baby, monster baby, and now Related to Evil. I'm very proud of Related to Evil. I think that it's got a lot of legs to it.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. I think that's wonderful. But Sam, you're also, for those of you who are watching Sam for the first time here, he's also been on television on a variety of paranormal type shows and other shows. Let's start with The Haunting as an example. What other shows have you been on, Sam?
I've been on multiple shows. So I've been on my first episode of A Haunting was the 100th episode, and we talked a little bit about that before. It's called Provoking Evil. Then I became a producer of season 11. So I was on season 10, and I started working behind the scenes on season 11 as an associate producer for A Haunting. Okay, and then so I've been on about 12 TV shows. So I was on Most Terrifying Places, where I focused on Salem, and Most Terrifying Places with Jason Hawes. I've been on a show called Fright Club. I've been on a show called Forbidden History, where we go to Salem, and my friend Dana Mason, who's a descendant of the Salem witch trials, we go and try to make an apology ritual for the sins of my cousin, Ann Putnam, who was one of the afflicted girls during the Salem witch trial. So many TV shows, but really my goal is not to be on television. My goal is to continue writing my books. TV shows are a flash in the pan. So it's a great way for people to get to know me, but I feel strongly that my passion is to, as a storyteller, it's to tell the stories of these innocent men and women, whether it's a television show, a radio show, a program like yours, or a book, that's how I'm going to do it.
Sam, tell everybody if they want to read more about you, how to find you. You've got some projects coming up here. Give us some of that detail.
Sure. Yeah. So if you want to know where I'm going or what books I've written, you go to sambaltrusis.com. That's got everything all put together on a website. Also, too, we have, I'm doing a show called Dead Ends. It's Haunted Hotels Live presents Dead Ends. We go to local hotels, or haunted hotels throughout the country, so they're not all local. And we have a team of amazing investigators that work on this program. It's a streaming show that right now we're trying to just have. We're not trying to have a huge audience. The goal is to really do a really quality product where we have a few engaged people watching the streaming show. So it's hauntedhotelslive.com is where you would go to watch that. And hopefully you'll be able to watch along with us as we investigate.
Thank you so much for being a part of this program, and hope to have you back in the late future. Thank you, Sam.
All right. Thank you.